Though I was going to change the sermon and talk about the issue of prisoners and torture. And I had a really great way of segueing Mother's Day into torture. But it didn't quite go where I really wanted it to go, particularly for this Mother's Day, which, as many of you know, for me is a particularly poignant one since it's my first Mother's Day without my mother. So I'm going to leave torture for another time. And my great fear and confidence is that that issue will remain alive and germane. I do have something that may sound political to say, but it really isn't. Yesterday I went to a John Kerry event, and I contributed the maximum amount of money that I could. And that's not an endorsement. Our tax-exempt status is not at peril here. But my mother was a member of the California Democratic Council. She was a political activist. She was a Democratic National Committee woman. And that last week I spent with her, her greatest desire was a regime change. And so in her honor, whoever you might guess I might be voting for, in her honor I attended that event. And it felt good, because it really was in her honor and an extension of her legacy, which is part of Mother's Day, and it is part of grieving, and it is part of honoring, and it is part of how we make ripples. It is, life does send out ripples way beyond its apparent points of entry and departure. As somebody who has done more funerals and memorial services than either I care to remember or can remember, it's one of the most powerful metaphors. We are not our dates of entry and departure. We are not our resumes. Our lives, like pebbles in the pond, send out ripples of memory as we touch people in ways that we have experienced ourselves being touched by other people and by earlier generations. Their lives go on in our conscious memory and in our unconscious memory and in memories that are awakened by a joke, a song, a smell, a hymn. I cannot make it through all through the night without breaking up, because I remember the stories of being held and carried all through the night, and I remember carrying my children all through the night as they were ill, and I remember and celebrate the poignancy of love, of what we are capable of feeling for others and giving to others. One of the reasons that in some ways I hesitated to do a Mother's Day sermon was not simply that it's a poignant time for me, but I've taken you on my journey in the last 2 months, in my journey of loss and of grief, and steps towards healing. And I didn't want to be self-indulgent, and I didn't want to be repetitive, so I'm going to kind of do the rest of the story. You know what my mother meant to me, and you know that while I celebrated her life, she was ready to go, and I accept that as much as anybody can accept loss, and I move her from in front of my eyes to inside my heart. But it's also not real, and I know that. My idea that I've gone through it. Driving back from church last Sunday, I remember thinking to myself, haven't talked to Mom, should call. Before I got that, I went, whoa! And I expect that that's going to go on for a while. But I also want to do the rest of the story. Because love is not always the same. There are 2.5 people here, there are 3 people here, who will soon be hearing the words of a poem that I use in weddings, and a number of you have heard it at your own weddings that I've conducted or that you have attended. And I think it tells the truth about love, and not simply about marital love, but every kind of love. The poet Anne Morrow Lindbergh wrote, "When you love someone, you do not love them all the time in exactly the same way from moment to moment. It's an impossibility. It's a lie even to pretend to, and yet this is exactly what most of us demand. We have so little faith in the flow of the tides of life, of love, of relationship. We leap at the flow of the tides and resist in terror their ebb. We are afraid they will never return. We insist on permanency, on duration, on continuity, when the only continuity possible in life, as in love, is in growth, fluidity, freedom. Freedom in the sense that the dancers are free, barely touching as they pass, but partners in the same pattern. The only real security is not in owning or possessing, not in demanding or expecting, not in hoping even. Security in a relationship lies neither in looking forward to what it might be in dread or anticipation, nor back to what it was in memory or nostalgia, but in living in the present relationship and accepting it for what it is now. For relationships too must be like islands. One must accept them for what they are, here and now, within their limits. Islands surrounded and interrupted by the sea, and continually visited and abandoned by the tides. One must accept the security of the winged life, of ebb, of flow, of intermittency. That, I believe, is how intimate relationships in families work. It is not constant. The relationship, the engagement is constant. But were there times when my mother wanted to kill me more than I can or want to imagine? Were there times when I walked out and slammed the door and couldn't tell the difference between no, because she was just mean, and no, because it was for me, or you better do this, or else, and fearing the else, and people yell and scream and slam doors and walk away. And there are all kinds of blessings, and we don't necessarily discern the blessings from the curses at the time. One of the outstanding gifts my mother gave me was cheating. She entered me in a speech contest when I was in the third grade, and it was impromptu speech. There were 6 categories of speech that we knew, and we would draw one and go to the front and address the group. She made me write 6 speeches, one on each topic, and memorize it. Memorize 6 speeches. So much for spontaneity. I won. Now that's a really interesting lesson, isn't it? And what I got from it was, it isn't kind of, you know, the Kobayashi solution to Star Trek. That's micro marketing, that's niche marketing, a sermon reference. It is the secret of spontaneity and making something look easy is relentless preparation. And that was one of her great gifts. The other being involvement in a political process and caring about other people and treating other people not as if we were equal, but because we are equal in our rights, in our obligations, in our duties one to another. Not as if, but because. Those are great gifts. Gifts of laughter, of music. But there were also tough times. I didn't like her second husband. Turned out neither did she, but she didn't know it at the time. And I married my mother to her third husband. And it's not everybody that can claim to have married his mother. Sometimes this takes a little bit of explaining to do, and people don't understand, and they think I'm talking Freudian, and of course, oh, we all do, and I get stuff like that. I said, no, I really married my mother. And then they start getting kind of the stinky look on them. Said, no, I'm a clergy person. I said, dearly beloved, and mom. That was quite a treat and experience to stand there and see my mother being terrified, actually by something I was doing, but more importantly by something she was doing. But there were tough times. There were tough times when I hurt her feelings and she hurt my feelings, and we didn't talk. And I need to explain, we didn't talk. I know there are lots of families that people don't talk to one another. I haven't talked to him in 5 years. I haven't talked to my son in 3 years. We're not talking. No. In my family, we're not talking means we're yelling. So I want you to know that we always err on the side of contact. Sometimes, and the error is on volume. It isn't on absence or presence. And so when people tell me they're not talking, I actually don't get it. But I do believe it. It's hard, but I do believe it. But I knew that our period of estrangement was over when I was coming back from the Peace Corps, and we're sailing up to the docks, my then wife, Barbara, and I. We had been married, incidentally, by Ernie Pipes at Santa Monica, Unitarian Church. And I said, Mom's going to be at the docks. And Barbara said, what? I said, Mom's going to be at the... Did she write you? No, she's just going to be at the docks. That's how she is. That's who she is. It's New York. We're sailing into New York. Yeah, she lives in California. Yeah, she hates flying. She's going to be at the docks. Barbara says, no way. We're standing by the rail as the QE2 sails in, and there's Mom at the docks. That's the kind of agape. That's the kind of unconditional love that we seek to have in marriage, as parents, as children, to be able to yell, to scream, to sometimes walk out and slam doors, but to come back again with some trust that the doors, figurative, metaphorical, and physical, will open again, even as hearts and arms open again. This is the importance of those intimate relationships of love that we have that do not die, but they do change. We do not get over the big changes in our life. We get through them, and it's a big difference in the words and in the metaphor. It is difficult to change status. It's difficult when children grow up and move out of the house. Children sometimes make it difficult when they grow up and move out of the house in order to move out of the house. Sometimes we make it difficult at the end of a life because it's hard to let go and to change. And so we sometimes pick fights, both those who are leaving and those who are staying, in order to make the change. It is a hard process to move people from always being in front of us to just inside our hearts. Whether that is a move to another city, another state, or past this life. These are all hard things for us to come to terms with. And I don't think that we ever truly finish the process. The words that I hear all the time in regular society are, we've got to get closure. I don't believe there's closure. I believe that there's change and that there's healing. I believe that when I go to a cemetery to either officiate or to mourn, and sometimes both, that that grave is symbolic of a hole in my life or in somebody else's life. And over time, the dirt is filled in, the life returns, the grass grows again, and it's symbolic of healing. But that vault is always there because there's something that is very changed in our lives. And that is wonderful. There is such a wonderful line in an old prayer book that I grew up with as a kid that says, our grief is according to our blessing, and tears are the tender tribute of yearning affection for one who is gone but cannot be forgotten. That's how we heal. And that's how we become able again to celebrate a life, to have a memory come back that is both poignant and nourishing. In the beginning, with loss, you get the pain and the poignancy. But as time goes by and healing takes place, you get the nourishment. In the beginning, you hear a song that you associate with a person, and you may weep. Then you may just twitch a little, and eventually you may smile. You'll hear a joke. You'll smell something. There's a reason that A la recherche de temps perdu begins with the smell of a cookie in another room, and off it goes for volumes and volumes, because there will be a legacy item baking in an oven, cooking on a stove, a song playing, a joke that is told, and memories and feelings and love flood back into our hearts, blessing us and warming us and reminding us, mothers and fathers and children and boys and girls, the amazing impact that we have on one another, and we don't realize it most of the time. And Mother's Day is a nice time just to stop, because it's something so very primal, and remember how we got here in every sense of the word. All of the yelling that got us here, all of the discipline, all of the holding, all of the walking, all of the crying, all of the laughing that got us here. I'm going to close with my mother's favorite joke. It's an ethnic joke. You will forgive her. An English woman wakes up and says, oh, I'm terribly tired and thirsty. I must have a spot of tea. A French woman wakes up and says, I am very tired. I am very thirsty. I must have some wine. A Jewish woman wakes up and says, I'm very tired. I'm very thirsty. I must have diabetes. Oi, 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 I hear. Oi, 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 I hear. It's very primal. A joke, a song, something simmering on the stove. Flood back the memories of childhood, of adulthood, of the people in our lives. And we know we are not separate species. We share a human condition. We share so much and are so responsible one to another. Who am I? I am so much in how I see myself. And how do I see myself? That is so much of how others act and react towards me. Am I smart? Am I stupid? Am I handsome? Am I ugly? Am I okay or am I not okay? And the first lessons that we get start at the beginning. Americans and other societies have very different ways of dealing with our ghosts. It's interesting that so much religion is involved with exorcism and keeping those ghosts away, that at Halloween in America and in Northern Europe, it's about trick-or-treat. How can I keep those ghosts and goblins out of my house? I'll bribe them to go away. In Mexico, on the Day of the Dead, the ghosts are invited for dinner. Picnics go out to the cemeteries, and food is taken as our ghosts are welcomed into our lives and into our memories. We do not forget, whether we want to forget or not. We do not forget. We carry all who have touched our hearts, good and bad, in our hearts. And as grown-ups, we get to invite our ghosts, both the spirits of the living and the dead, back into our hearts and into our lives, and to take the good and let it find expression in how we go on in our ripple, in our wave, as we touch others. Our ghosts live through our hands, our eyes, and our hearts. And today, we bless them.